I would like to, so it's very difficult to give a talk here to such a wide audience, and in particular, I see some distinguished colleagues, mathematicians who came here, so I'll try to present things for which are going to be geared towards the spirit of this conference. So it's going to be simple mathematically, I hope. And please interrupt me if you if there are things which are obscure or there are terminology which is not clear and so on. So I'm going to actually to talk about two things. I want to first discuss in another context than criminology models of reaction diffusion for population ecology, and I'm going to do this for two reasons. One is that I think that it probably can give an idea why such models might be of use in the framework of criminology. And second, also because I think it illustrates what is the type of information, of insight that one can get from these models. It's not the type of insight where we're going to fit data, but more trying to understand some mechanisms, trying to understand some basic mechanisms. So I'm going to speak about this for two reasons. And the second part, I'll try to present a kind of framework, a modeling framework, which is really a proposal, more or less, and awaits criticism and reactions by you. OK, so anyways, I'm going to heed the call of John Eck. I definitely hit the call, and here is our answer. He was talking about barbarians sailing off the coast of Normandy. Here they are, but maybe we identify not with the barbarians in this case because of our Gallic approach. But anyways, here it is, and the non-political, not politically correct statement. At some point, we wanted to include here instead of this anchor the word PDEs, but so we thought better not to do it. Anyway, so this, we are hitting this call, and so from this point of view, I'm really going also, I'm really a mathematician, not at all an expert in criminology by no means, and so I'm going to, I hope to bring things which might be of interest to you. So I first want to describe in a very general way What is a mechanism for reaction diffusion, and why it produces fronts in excitable media. Then I will just say a few words about reaction diffusion equations, and I want to illustrate some of the mathematical studies on some questions arising in biology and the model for the persistence of species. I don't think that I'll have time to speak about another issue, which is modeling the impact of a climate change within on species persistence, an important question, as you know, within this framework. And then I will just say a few words about some questions, some models which exist about, some mathematical models about the spread of illegal behavior, but mostly I want to describe, I hope I have time to get to this new framework we would like to present. So let me start with explaining the propagation and excitable media. And so this is what was in my title. I mentioned flames because I think that flames is one of the best frameworks to describe how reaction diffusion mechanism gives rise to front propagating. So think of a tube which contains a gas, and you start heating it at some point. And what you see, so initially the temperature distribution looks like this, and what you see as the time evolves, you see that the temperature rising spreads out. In fact, you have what I like to call two fronts moving away one from another. This is what I call a front, some profile of temperature between T max and the largest temperature and the ambient temperature here. This is a traveling front. This is a very important experiment in flame propagation. It's one of the most basic tools. There is a definite speed associated with it and a definite profile associates. So let me tell you about the mechanism involved in that. So we start with an energy input, we heat some part and it raises the temperature. If the temperature is raised enough, then we go beyond a certain threshold, which is related to the activation energy, and a reaction starts to take place significantly. This reaction, produced in this framework, it's exothermic, releases heat. As heat is released so there was reaction, now there's diffusion. As heat is released, it starts heating the neighboring slices of the gas by this conduction, by diffusion. And as these slices heated sufficiently, they themselves react and heat the neighboring slices and so forth. This is reaction diffusion, basic reaction diffusion mechanism. It's a very important, in my mind, a very important mechanism which is really ubiquitous in the life sciences. It's one of the essential building blocks of modeling in biology. And there is another thing here, which is saturation effect. In this case, so temperature cannot, this doesn't go indefinitely, because there is the fuel, and the fuel is consumed, for instance, the reaction ceases, and there is a saturation effect. So this is my example of flame propagation, and it's really that's a mechanism. It's really a very important, in my mind, mechanism. And there are many, many examples of such mechanisms also in biology, in population ecology. I will mention some of this. It's a very general model. It has been used in variations of this, I mean, more sophisticated versions of it. It's been used in describing tumor growth, wound healings, and things of the like. So basically, the same mechanism. And for instance, it's also used in ecology. This is, I like very much this picture because this is an example of biological invasion which took place in Europe by the muskrat, which is not a native species in Europe. It was imported from the US. And one knows exactly where and when it was imported. So there were six specimens which were used here to breed, to produce fur. And it was done not far from Prague. And then people mapped in a very detailed fashion the area which was colonized by these muskrats. And that was the first study by Skellam of using reaction diffusion equations. I want to give you another example of propagation of fronts in excitable media. That's a generic word. And this comes from social sciences. I like very much this example. And if I can have it work. So this is, here it is. So this is in an arena in France. And you see what's happening here if you pay attention. This is, it is a problem, right? It's very interesting. There are a lot of interesting mathematical objects, properties in this thing, actually. Let's go back to the beginning of it. Look what's happening. It's there, right? And it crosses over to the other thing. So it means that the audience here has gone to the quotient, has gone to the quotient of the stadium and considered that you can close this thing, right? So it's a quotient passing operation, which is not real. Some friends of mine claim that they have seen like solitons, two waves passing, crossing one another in opposite directions. And you can see also extinction phenomena. Usually it occurs in the where you have expensive seats. So there are lots of things to be done. Unfortunately, the French Research Institute doesn't want to pay me tickets to go to see them. So I cannot tell you more about it. Anyway, so this is exactly the same reaction diffusion mechanism for the Mexican wave. And this is... so it's really the same, by the way. It's really the same mechanism, really. You know, you're excitable, so you can react. And as soon as you are touched somehow by sight, probably, you start reacting, and then on turn, you pass this and this. There is a relaxation after this. That's the difference. But aside from this, it's not It's really the same mechanism. So that's why I want to say that it's an ubiquitous mechanism. Let me just say something about the reaction diffusion equation, so which has been used. So the reaction diffusion equation is the simplest form, is a balance, which tells you that the variation here, so it's a partial differential equation, the variation of some quantity U. In my previous examples, U could be the temperature, or it could be a concentration, for instance. It could be a concentration of some species. And it says that the variation at some point Tnx in time is a resultant of two effects. One is represented here by the Laplacian, and it's a diffusion effect. So the fact that the individuals somehow randomly spread. And the other one here, f of u, is some reaction term. And there are various various versions of this f. It has been introduced in the late 30s in two milestone papers by Fisher, the famous Fisher, Kolmogorov, Petrovsky, Piskunov. It was introduced, it's less known, the same year by Zeldovich von Kamenetsky for for flame propagation. And versions of this, let me just say, also have been introduced, that's wrong date, by the way, it was earlier, 52, I think, by Hodgkin Huxley, and for propagation of axons. And then there was this beautiful idea of Turing, really fantastic idea of Turing, that systems of this kind would explain pattern formation. It was interesting in embryology. Now, I want to tell you two properties which are really important for this reaction diffusion equation. So one is traveling waves, and you have seen examples of such traveling waves in the combustion or in the stadium. And so reaction diffusion equations have the property that they sustain traveling waves. Traveling waves are solutions which move, which have a given profile, and move with a constant speed. So forget about the details here, but it's really this. So it's a solution which has this shape and moves with a constant speed c, and only depends in one variable. So it's a constant in the cross variables. So if you do that, you're led to nonlinear differential equations, very well understood. And there are, I don't want to go into this discussion, but there are several types of nonlinearities people have considered. This is the most common one in population, but ecology, but also this appears in combustion. There is an ignition threshold here, and this has bistable appears also in combustion and in population dynamics. So let me not spend too much time on this. There is another property I want to explain also for this. Is in one of the cases here, forget about the details, mathematical details, but basically what is happening is that you can describe a situation where if you start initially, if you have an initial distribution confined in a certain point, at a certain region, then what you see in one of the cases in the population, if you don't have predators, if you don't have adverse effects, it spreads. And one of the theorems which I passed very quickly before tells you that it's going to spread essentially by forming a kind of round interface. So things will expand and eventually become rounder and rounder. So this is this type of, so you have an interface here which is spreading. Let me show you that this indeed occurs, right? So this is an experiment which you can download from the internet. And this is a bacterial growth experiment. This is an experiment. So it summarized what's happening in 12 hours, where you take the Streptococcus pneumonia. So this is you start with initial seed and it reproduces, and this is what you have here. So you see it really forms exactly. So it's completely, in other words, the model I showed you before really represents this type of phenomena. You have seen how somehow this expansion is captured by this type of process. So let me now show you. So this was a general framework. I want to tell you about two recent works. I'm going to tell you about the consequences, but two recent works, and to illustrate these points I was telling you at the beginning, that is, what is the type of result, what type of insight we can gain from this type of models, right? So I will do this in the framework of population ecology. So the question I want to address is to understand, it's a very important question in population ecology, is how can you understand the influence of the environment on species persistence? So in other words, you have an environment which is made up of certain regions which are favorable and others which are unfavorable. How does this globally make up a picture where you can understand if the overall thing is going to be favorable or not? And I want to show you how one can understand this on this with such a model. So the model here is basically the reaction diffusion equation, which I mentioned before. The Fisher equation had the term u times 1 minus u, so u minus u squared. Here I'm going to make it non-homogeneous. It's going to be to involve a term here, mu of x, in front of u. And this mu of x, in this context, represents the effective birth rate. So it's birth rate minus death rate. And forget about the mu of x. Mu of x is really related here to the fact that you have a saturation effect. Take it 1, for instance, positive. You have a saturation, maximum carrying capacity, if you want. So mu of x is really what tells you that that what the environment is. If mu is large, means that it's very favorable in medium. If it's small, it's less favorable. And in fact, you may also include zones where it's downright negative, where the species by itself would not survive in such a zone. Okay, so the death rate exceeds the birth rate. And so there are particular cases you can take of particular cases where you take two values of mu, so one large one and one small one, which may be negative. And this is usually referred to as a patch model. You have superposition of patches which are homogeneous. Each one of them is homogeneous. And I want to think of this in the periodic framework. So you're going to take a periodic. So what I'm saying is that in this case, so nu is 1, I'm looking for stationary solutions, and I'm saying that the survival here is completely characterized by this equation. And first of all, so we can solve this equation. We have a theorem. This is a joint work not long ago with François Hamel and Yon and Laroque. And so we have several. There is a result here which says that there exists a positive solution, so a candidate for persistence, if you want, for stationary persistence profile, if and only if you have here a certain eigenvalue associated to a linearized problem. So you linearize near p equals 0. You linearize this equation. It depends on mu. But you impose, you insist that you look for periodic eigenfunctions. So in R2 or R. And the necessary, if you have a complete answer, necessary sufficient condition is that this principal eigenvalue be negative, okay? Let me continue. So furthermore, this solution is unique among all possible bounded solutions, is unique, and there is only one solution, it has to be periodic. And also, this condition also completely describes what's happening in the long range, in the long time dynamics. If lambda is negative, what you will see, starting from any initial patch, small patch, you will see convergence to this survival state P. So you see, things will move away from zero, and you will have this where P would be presumably high in favorable regions, but small in unfavorable regions. Whereas when lambda 1 is greater than or equal to zero, you will have extinction. No matter where you start from, the whole population will go down to zero. So the reason why I like this, it may not appear like this maybe for people who are not experts. Here, but the reason why I like this is that we have a criterion which is expressed in one condition. So the sign of lambda 1, which is a well-defined mathematical object. And this criterion somehow summarizes a very complex interaction. You see, you have a very complex interaction on what is the shape of the unfavorable zones, how unfavorable it is there, how favorable it is elsewhere. And this criterion allows you to answer questions now, to understand mechanisms. Let me give you an example. The example I want to give you is the effect of roads in a forest. So this is to simplify things. Think of this periodically. We don't want to have boundary effects, so we think of this periodically. This is one periodicity. And Suppose you have a forest, and you have to make some roads across this forest, and you can do so. You have the choice of doing several things. You can build some roads which are small ones, and in this case, like four of them. Or you can decide to build one large road, which the width of which is the same as the sum of the width above, right? And let's assume that we are interested in a species which likes to be on in forests, but not in roads. So it's not like the Homo motoris, maybe. Anyway, so we have this thing, and the question is, so suppose you have those two things, so you have an unfavorable medium, which is a road, and favorable medium, and the question is, which one of the two configurations leaves the most chances for the species to survive? Well, I'm asking you. So there's really mixed. So who votes for the top one?
But haven't we got to know how wide the tree space?
No, it's the same. It's the same. It's the same density. It's the same.
Right.
The characteristic of the mediums are the same. Otherwise, it wouldn't make any sense.
But you've got other three variables.
This is really a question of a physicist. It's the same characteristics. So who votes for the top one? Who votes for the bottom one? Okay, so the majority is wrong. It's the second configuration, please, and it's a counterintuitive thing. But I see that people from Canada had a good insight. And this is really related to, then you can relate this to something which is called the adverse effect of fragmentation in ecology. You know, if you start, you have landscape and you start building here and there, if you fragment it too much, then it's really worse than having one bad area. And this you can prove, so you can prove this mathematically using this criterion. You can prove this, in my mind, is not something you see, you saw the answers here that we got. It's not something that the intuition gives you immediately the answer. So it's a good example, in my mind, to show you how you can how you can understand some mechanisms.
Does the problem change dramatically if you add corridors between the fragments?
If you have, I'm sorry?
Add corridors between the fragmented components.
We have to work this out. It's a good question. But the criterion should tell us. I don't think so. Actually, I don't think so. In this case, would be. I don't think so. The answer is no. The answer is no. It's better to be of one. By the way, in dimension two, the question of what is the optimal shape, so if you allow not parallel things, what is the optimal shape is an open question. It's not a trivial, there's very beautiful mathematics behind it. It's not known. What is the optimal shape under the constraint of having a given size, a given measure of the unfavorable? By the way, and this has really, of course, you can look at it, I mentioned it with for the survival species, but you can think of it as very important for the eradication of pests. So this tells you that if you want to have a chance to eradicate pests, you should really somehow disperse your efforts. And so let me give you an example of this. For instance, this is a computation. So we have the same initial distribution here, and we have here favorable. So favorable is here. Here we bring together favorable. It matters in this case because the finite region didn't matter in previous case. So the favorable is here, unfavorable is there, and it has the same area. So I let this equation evolve, and you see what's happening. The species dies out because there's. Too much effect, you know, it jumps from one era to the other and jumps too many times into the unfavorable era. Whereas here, enough of it gets into the favorable region so that it stays. So this is again an example of what you get from this type of models. By the way, another application of the direct computation was from this criterion I gave you is that if you start with a distribution mu of x, which has some fixed mu naught, say, very unfavorable, and you add a very small fraction of the area, you add a favorable part, very small, very not extended part, then if the amplitude where it's favorable is sufficiently high, you always have persistence. So no matter how dire the conditions are outside this favorable area, if it's favorable enough inside this thing, then we will have persistence. And this is really something that tells us in this context, it's an analogy really, but it's really that's an effect of a hotspot. So if you have a hotspot, no matter what you do nearby, if you want to eradicate, in this case, this problem, you don't succeed if it's favorable enough inside. I don't know if this is coherent with what you know from real life analogy, but it's an analogy. So I don't really have time to. How many more hours do I have? Don't tell me point something.
20 minutes.
Okay. So let me just tell you very briefly on this. So that's another example of a question of a situation where we can find an answer. And this is, you want to understand situations of, in this context of population dynamics, on effect of global warming, say, I've said the word, on the survival of species. And what has been observed is that, what does it mean, global warming? In fact, practically it means that the isotherms are moving northward, and in fact also upward when you have mountains. So the isotherms are moving northward. And what one has seen, and that's really an interesting thing, that one has seen that there are species which adapt, others which don't, others which are going to be extinct because of this movement. They just can't change territories. Some species which are very much dependent on the temperature, and there are many, many species like that. And in some cases, one sees species which actually expand their area while moving, and others which retract. And this was considered a puzzle, why you have these various effects, and what is it. So let me show you a very... So these are examples. By the way, this is an example which shows you why it's natural to think that an area occupied by species really depends on the moving of the isotherms. Here you have the isotherm. This is a mountain. And so this is the west coast of America, of course, northwest coast. And here you have a mountain, and you see the isotherms have moved from here to here, and roughly speaking, the colonized area has followed exactly, not exactly, but essentially this pattern. So it's very natural to believe that this is the case. And there are other studies, in particular for this type of butterflies, which are very, very dependent on the minimal temperature in January, and in which case you have seen extension to the north, expansion to the north, and retraction to the south. Whereas in other cases, you see the total area expanding. And what was the reason for that? So this has been published in Nature, and some papers in Nature in particular. And in this paper in Nature in particular, they really say that they don't understand why you have this mechanism of having certain species which expand and others which retract. And so this is something, we have a model which explains this. This is a joint work with Odo Dieckmann, Kees Nagel, Kerke, and Zegelin from the Netherlands. And Nagel Kerke is a biologist. He actually had done some earlier work in this direction. And the model is as follows. So first of all, let's assume that the north south axis, the axis, is just a line. So we make it infinite. The south, minus infinity, is going to be the equator, plus infinity is going to be the north pole. And with the modification of climate is going to be represented here by a shift, an imposed, exogenously given shift of the favorable zone. So, and what's happening is that so the domain becomes less favorable to the south and more favorable to the north. And we want to understand what's happening, if the species can cope with this or not, in terms of various parameters, characteristics of the species. And so here is the model. The model is exactly the simple reaction diffusion equation which I had before, but with a very important feature in it, that there is here an exogenously given translation of this profile. First of all, it's heterogeneous, so it's going to be favorable only in a finite zone, and this finite zone moves with a constant speed, which is given exogenously. And U is the density, is the rate of the species. So this is the situation. You have an initial favorable domain. Your function, so it's unfavorable here, unfavorable there, but favorable here. What I draw here is the effective birth rate in this model. And the effective birth rate, so death rate, overcomes birth rate here, and the contrary here. And this moves. So can you find? So again, this is really related to the existence of stationary solutions which adapt traveling waves. And there is again a theorem phrased in terms of a principal eigenvalue. You have to define what it means in this case. Never mind, but the principal eigenvalue of this linearized operator. And this, to complete the theorem, really which we prove is that there exists a persistence if and only if this eigenvalue is negative, principal eigenvalue. And this gives us conditions in terms of the various parameters here, the mobility of the species, the width of the initial zone, what G is, the form, and so on. And again, this summarizes a very complex interaction, again. But the interesting thing is, one of the interesting things that we can see in this case, that depending on the various parameters, we have one of the following two regimes. One is the case when this is what's plotted here is the total size of the population. The total size of the population more or less confined within the favorable area with a tail outside. And what you see here is that for certain cases, in certain cases, as you start moving the climate, the total size just dwindles down all the way. Whereas in other cases, what you see is that initially, for small enough speeds, the total size grows. So there is an initial favorable effect on the species, on some species. The reason for this is that basically this happens when the conditions are not too harsh outside the favorable region. This basically really caused by the fact that there's enough expansion on the new area and not so much depletion back. And this also tells you why you can have, I don't have time to go into this, why you can have an expanding total region, as we have seen on those. So this explains this, really explains this. Yes?
Well, how sensitive are these figures to the size of the initial population? Or is it pretty much invariant?
So in this case, in this simplified model, what's happening is that there's no effect, long-term effect of the initial size. Either it converges to this adapting state. I didn't include this, but there is a theorem analogous to the one I quoted earlier, which is if lambda 1 is negative, no matter how small the initial term distribution is, it will converge to the adapting front. And no matter how large it is, if lambda is positive, it's doomed to be extinct.
Is there a biological interpretation for lambda?
Lambda one itself. Well, you can say something about the fact that it is a stability statement, the stability statement about the extinct state. So lambda one negative means that the extinct state is repellent, if you want, and lambda one positive means that it's attractive, right? More or less, that's what you can say. But overall, what you have to do, so this is a criterion of lambda 1, but lambda 1 summarizes really many complicated phenomena, all of which have a biological interpretation. So for instance, this lambda 1, you can do it explicitly, you can compute explicitly in some specific cases, and you express it in terms of D, and this has exactly this biological interpretation.
Can I ask the question? In this case, since we have an unbounded domain, is there a continuous spectrum of linearized problems? And if there is, how does that affect the marginal case, which seems then that
yes, absolutely.
Very different.
Yes, there is. There, of course, if it's unbounded, you have this is the bottom of the continuous spectrum that you get here. Absolutely, and that's why you also have to take care in how you define the principal eigenvalue. This is not a self-adjoint problem, so it's not immediately given to you how you define. So there is a general theory about how you define the principal eigenvalue in an unbounded domain for general elliptic operators. One way to do it is to take limits of bounded domains, Dirichlet problem. It's not obvious why you should take Dirichlet, but that's one way to do it, Dirichlet. And you let the radius go to infinity. You have a limit, and this limit is what you call the principal eigenvalue. And you can do, there are other ways you can define it, and they somehow.
No, I'm not worried
but,
about
but
how
so the marginal case, indeed, it's contained here. And it is the marginal case is a little bit more delicate to treat for exactly because what lurks behind is what you are saying. But you can still include it, and this is where the minus u square term somehow helps you in some sense. Okay, so let me now tell you a little bit about modeling. I will not have time to say all what I want in this framework. I'm going to put all what starts from here on the website notes. So everyone wants to see the continuation of the lecture is welcome to look at it. So as we have seen from biology, I think from our perspective, what is the limited goals we can assign to modeling here would be to try to understand some stylized facts. So if we can understand some stylized facts, which is the fact that we learned from listening to you, basically, or reading your papers, is that would be already something both useful to validate the model and second, to try to shed some light on the mechanism. And then eventually, so the simplified models, the hope would be that if they are pertinent, they should be included in some larger scale models, which eventually may come out in the future. But so we're at the very beginning from our point of view in this thing. I like to quote from Paul Ormeron, who says that modeling aims at creating an innovative framework to understand better the process by which crime rates spread or contract over time. Nonlinear models are created which have crime rates as one of their outputs. These models can be used to analyze what the effects of change of policy might be on levels of crimes. And so there are references you will find, and just to I'll flash this without going into details. But Paul Ormeron went on with some people in the home office, actually, in the UK, went on to write down an epidemiology model, very much in the spirit of what you heard in Ira Schwartz's lecture the other day. So it's an epidemiology problem. You have the non-infected, the susceptible, and the criminals. He's for criminals here. And you have all these various interactions. And in fact, you can also include, and that was one, so this was the usual epidemiology model, the classical epidemiology model. What he went on doing was to add prison effect. So prison effect, and you have people who are captured, who go to prison here, you have the criminals who are released, with certain probabilities they become honest citizens, with another probability they just fall back into their bad habits. And you have these effects of prison, and prison has some deterrent effect, susceptible go back to being normal. And doing this, so this is an interesting system, what he did, and it's related, this type of thing is really related to what I want to discuss. He even somehow calibrated this on new data from the UK and came up with predictions on what would different measures, how would different measures affect the overall level of crime. So this is this can be found in this calibration. This can be found in his paper. I'll leave this and also the references on the paper. So this So let me tell you now about a framework here that we are developing with Silvio France and Jean-Pierre Nadal was here. Jean-Pierre Nadal, let me point him out, he's here. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask him. and anything which you think is wrong, it is his fault. So anyways, so it's a modeling framework, and it's work in progress. So there is a version of this model. I'm going to tell you about the Kunis version. There is a discrete version of this model with agent-based type of models. But I'm going to tell you with the continuous version of this model. And there is an effect here of space. So X is going to be a coordinate of space. Okay, I'm going to think of X, remember, is a coordinate of space. And space, we really want to understand some spatial effects, as my title indicated. And we want to understand criminality, but actually, criminality, as it was, as we have seen in the various lectures, covers really a whole broad range of activities. And certainly, I think what I'm going to describe today is more geared towards understanding minor offenses, what I'd like to call illegal behavior or even uncivil behavior. This can spread. So it's not going to be burglaries, as we have heard. And for instance, I'm not saying. Although presumably this can also be relevant to more general. So we want to talk about continuous variables, not. I hope that Marcus will approve this. Not just binary choice, being a criminal or not. But to talk about the continuous variable, and we want to describe this variable as a density of crimes or illegal behavior, let us say, which are observed at point X and at time T. And again, we are going to talk about aggregate quantities, so it's something for which you have enough of them, not major crimes.
So you're talking about running red lines?
Wait. You'll see this in a minute, okay? Yes, exactly. So this belongs to general class of models, which are models of choice under social influence. We want to understand the role of social influence. The groundbreaking works. There are Schelling's and Van der Wetter's initial papers, and there has been now new approaches on this, done by physicists. Jean-Pierre Nadal is involved in both of them, and using this type of discrete choices. And we're going to describe here continuous choice. Okay. So let me tell you what has the ingredient here. So first of all, let me describe the situation static and when there is no social influence. So what we postulate is that there exists a quantity h of x, which somehow describes at point x, which somehow describe what I like to call the idiosyncratic willingness to act. So if you think in terms of an individual, this is going to be aggregated. An individual, it's whether I really would like to commit this type, particular type of crime, or then H is positive, I really have a crave for this, so H is large, or I don't want and I really dislike it, H is negative. And this H could represent also thrills, as was mentioned this morning. Right? It's not only. So thrills can be, of course, involved. This is a resulting variable. So H of X represents this type of thing. And so it can depend on various things. And I'm going to assume that it's that involves a variable which is going to be fixed, not time dependent. There could be a further updating process on H, of course, right? And then there is another concept. So H of X is your willingness to do it. But then there is another variable which is what's actually happening. What's actually happening is you, the level of crime being committed is you of T and X, or U of X in this static case for the moment. And this is going to be a density or rate of uncivil activity. And so it's going to be between 0 and 1 for simplicity. Okay? So it's a density like what we have seen before. Now, how do you go from H to U? So this would postulate that there is a function lambda, which we call the acting out function. Lambda is acting out. You have your, what you like to do, but then you act out, whether you act out or not is given by lambda. And lambda is zero. There's nothing happening if what's inside is negative, but then it starts increasing and saturates at one. So a good example, you see, we come to it. A good example for this model is to think about speeding offenses. Speeding offenses, you're on the road, and this, so you have certain values of h of x. And for, so h of x, for instance, you are, so if you're on a big interstate road, and so you really would like, whether there's many people or not many people around you, depending, you may want to, you may want certain hours, you may want to speed up very much, or not. So you are really, if you're really someone who really wants to obey the law, you're really very careful, if not. And you have h of x for very, each can be different, those factors can be very different on this different road. Basically, as you know, we know, speeding offenses is a major factor in death on car accidents. So acting out functions, so think of this, that's a good framework to think about what I'm going to describe. So it's a question whether you do, you want to go speeding or not. And again, it's an aggregate, it's not an individual. So here you have several, you can think, lambda is not given by first principles. So you can think of different things, and probably there is some choices to be done on what type of lambda you want to be done, but there is a saturation level. No matter, even there is no way you're going to act out too much, even if you have a very large age. So it's bounded by one. So how does this, another extension we can have is that you can have lambda depending on x. This, for instance, the x dependence on lambda can incorporate the opportunities. It can incorporate the opportunities. But it can also, there's a little bit here, an ambiguity. H of x can also incorporate what Wim mentioned in his talk this morning. Opportunities was one part of it, the attractiveness, as you call it, the attractiveness. So H can also represent the attractiveness in general. Anyways, but there is also, you can put it in X here, so there is opportunities, you have a willingness to act, and X, lambda becomes higher because there are more opportunities. And then there is a perception of risk, cost, or punishment, which is given by factor C. So there is a perception of risk which is associated with level U, which is CU. So actually what you do is that you don't act just simply because of your craving to be a criminal, but you act on really on the basis of age, your willingness to do it, minus what you perceive as a cost of doing it. So the real level of activity is U is lambda of H minus CU. Then there is a dynamics, and the dynamics, I don't have time to go into details, you'll find there's an updating, and you update it on what you observed at the past period. So you adjust to what you observe in the last period, and I think this is fairly reasonable. So you end up with a system of equation, which is given by this. The next point is that we can introduce social influence. So diffusion here, if you want, or imitation. So imitation is going to play a basic role. So what you see, and what's happening at point Y is going to affect what you will do at point X. You're at point X, what you do at point X, you observe what's going on at Y, so J can be short range, for instance, or not. And so you have in this equation, you need to add a term which is affected by the activity level at point Y times J. So this is really a system of this type. And so we can analyze simple cases, for instance. I have to conclude, I know. So let me just give you one thing here that comes out of this. So you can analyze, you can say a little bit about things. But basically, what this thing shows is that there's a generic possibility of multiple equilibria. And well, this morning someone was complaining about multiple solutions. I, on the contrary, think that multiple equilibria is an essential feature in this model. And this has been observed in an important paper on the economics of crime by Ed Glaser, Sacerdote, and José Scheinkmann, who, because it's really a mystery why cities which have so much the same socioeconomic features have such a wide variety of different crime rates. This is really, for economists, it's really a major puzzle. And it's only through these types of models that you can understand it. So this is one simple model which tells you that for the same given situation, you may have a very high level of crime and a small portion of exactly the same situation. And there will be, let me go to it, there will be a hysteresis phenomenon. So the hysteresis phenomenon, and I will conclude on this, is something where you increase the cost. So you are at a level of crime rate, it decreases the crime rate. Past a certain threshold C, what you see is that you go down to a very low level of activity. If you have reached this level of low level of criminal activity, if you go down with C, then you will still stay with a low level of activity. You will not immediately. So I guess that this may have some policy implications. Certainly it is true for the speeding offenses, at least what we have seen in France. It used to be that people would really do a lot of speeding offenses in France. And all of a sudden there was a very harsh policy of having lots of radars, increasing the fines, and what have you. And there's been an enormous drop of this. And I don't have time to go on this, but I could elaborate on what the social influence in this case. Indeed, when you drive, you see what the others are doing. And you have exactly this phenomenon, as you all know, that when you are, this is something which really amazed me, by the way. And sometimes you are in the States, you drive on the interstate, and everyone is driving 15 miles above the limit. Everyone. I used to think that in America people were law-abiding citizens.
That's only in Los Angeles.
No, I've seen this in Chicago. I was really amazed. On Lakeshore Drive, sometimes people just... And in fact, I was the only one, because as a foreigner, I was somehow afraid. So I was driving slowly, and people were honking behind me and so on.
Because you were in the left lane.
Yeah, no, but not even. As a Frenchman, I was in the left lane, sure.
That's the way they were on.
Anyway, so this is, I don't have time, but then you can make this much more elaborate, you can include deterrence, how people react, if there is social reaction to this, and you even end up with having models of partial differential equations. This is really going from the simplest to the most complicated cases, but one of the things I hope is that with this type of models, maybe we can start observing formation of spikes. So maybe we can observe indeed formation of... So this is a very nonlinear type of equations. You have this the relation between nu and lambda, so to degenerate, in most cases, evolution equations can be replaced also by the Laplacian instead of J. And so the perspectives here is that we need definitely to have more specifications to these models. We need to better understand the spatial influence. We need to understand non-homogeneous diffusion, the influence of location, the topology, the roads. I think probably if we could have a better understanding of the streets, I mean, to have understand, probably be all this is going to be, can have nonlinear costs. And and as I said, formation of spikes, and I just conclude with the fact that we do have access to data also in France with Jean-Pierre, and we now have access to some data of the city of Paris, concerning the city of Paris, for all kinds of crimes. Those are, you know, there are some confidentiality issues there, but we somehow have access for all crimes of which, in some, for which the offender is known, has been identified by the police at least. And we know where they come from. And so this, we hope, will be something that will help us understand whether we can do something with some of these phenomena or not, and by spatial diffusion or not. In particular, one consequence of this, Paris, the suburbs, is a very serious problem, as you all know, I'm sure. And one of the facts that 50% of all crimes committed in Paris are committed by people who come from outside, from the suburbs. Okay, so thank you for your patience and attention.